And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the season end of TXHT Serious Hockey Talk. Serious Hockey fans, Michael here. And joining me is my good friend, number one, from Forever Blue Shirts, Mr. Russell Hartman. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be back on TXHT.
And if your phone beeps again, I'm smacking you.
All right. Let me silence some notifications. Give me a second.
You're recording, sir. And then, ladies and gentlemen, he is our St. Louis Blues writer of, yes, those St. Louis Blues, the now Stanley Cup champions, Mr. Arjen Weisenfeld. Arjen, congrats.
Thank you.
Now you know how I feel after last summer.
Yeah, well, so I had to wait longer. And the Blues, I'll always say, last year everyone said, you know, the Capitals, most tortured fan base in hockey. I'm like, are you guys crazy? Are you crazy?
Blues. I mean, you still have Vancouver who hasn't won one. You still have Buffalo who hasn't won one. You still have Vegas. Oh, wait, they're only 2 years into the league. Never mind. You have the Atlanta Thrashers. Oh, wait, no, they're now in Winnipeg now.
Wait a minute. The Capitals are a torture fan base? Capitals fans got to see the greatest goal scorer of all time every year. Light it up every year. I don't want to hear tortured.
Well, no, I think the word tortured is more towards how the playoffs have always come along.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have all these great seasons, and then, like, you get in the first round, you're knocked down the first round, you get in the second round, you get knocked down the second round, and you're always considered, like, a cup contender. Like, you're a team that should be going to the final, and you don't make it. And, like, for us, and, like, Russell, you and I talked about on the Forever Blue Shirts podcast, and that was the fact that, like, when Kuznetsov scored that Game 6 overtime winning goal against Pittsburgh, it literally felt like all those demons were exercised at that moment. You know, so it's like, for us as a tortured fan base, I would agree leading all the way up to the Stanley Cup. But now that we have it, like, when the Caps got bounced in Game 7, like, I'm not going to lie, and I actually had this conversation with some of my friends who are, like, either A, work for the Capitals, or B, are, like, season ticket holders and are diehard fans. Like, the number one thing that we said to each other was, like, man, I'm so happy they got knocked out because I'm so exhausted. You know? Because it was like, you know, well, I mean, keep in mind, you have that such a long playoff run.
Yeah.
You know, and you go into June, you win the cup. The Caps won the cup on June 7th. We had the parade, ironically, a day before, you know, the day that the Blues ended up winning the cup this year. Because our cup parade was, I believe, June 10th or June 11th. And the Blues won the cup on June 12th. And then all of a sudden you're going right into the draft. Then you're going into the awards, which nobody cares about. Then you're going right into the draft, which everyone does care about.
Bingo.
And then you go right into development camp, which just started today for the Capitals. And then you go right into free agency. And then finally you get to take a time off. But the problem is that because you're also the Cup champions, you're doing all the celebrations with the Cup during the summer, and your regular off-season routine is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's irregular. And then you have that shortened break where you essentially have, like, 2 months before you go into training camp compared to, like, the 3 to 4 that we used to get, or accustomed to. And then you get right back into it, and it's like, man. It's like, by the time you get to the All-Star break, you're just kind of a little tired, and, like, you accept that break for what it is, and then you go back into it, and then you get into that playoff push, and you're just like, man, I'm really tired. I want my team to lose.
I don't think I'm going to feel that way.
You probably will start feeling that way next season, you know?
We'll see.
I mean, but that's just how some of us felt. It's like, because it was exhausting. You know, because, I mean, you look at how much hockey is played. Like, I mean, look at the Penguins. You know, back-to-back cups, and then they went, the Game 6 of the second round again the following year after their second cup in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is a brutally battered and bruised and exhausted team.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you got to look at it from that. It's like, you go into that, and then you go into the next season. Like, so for the Capitals, you had the 82-game season, and then the 24, I believe it was like, what, 24 games the Capitals played in the playoffs last season?
Yep.
Leading up, to the Cup?
Yeah.
And then you play another 82 games this season, and an additional 7 games on top of that. You take those 2 seasons combined with a 2-month break compared to other teams having a 3 to 4 month break, you're exhausted. That is a lot of hockey that you played.
If
but you know, it's all worth it. And Blues fans and like you, you know, my Caps fans, you guys are going to trade that for anything. That's
oh yeah,
that's the ultimate. You'll take one tired season after reaching the peak.
Oh yeah. And that's the thing. It's like this offseason has been very – oh, actually, the funny thing is, no offense to you, Arian, but when the Blues finally won the Cup, I was like, oh, thank God there's no more games to cover for the rest of the season. You know, because that's the other thing. And for people who don't know, this is part 1 of 3, and it's all being put on one blog post, so there's 3 different audio files, and this is part 1 of it. But we – But, like, this is the first year we had a website. And we were writing blogs, and we were writing game recaps, and we tried to write game previews. That died after the halfway point of the season. You know, we did a trade tracker. We did, you know, we have an off-season tracker now. It's like we have the whole NWHL thing that's up and running now for us. You know, like, there's just so much stuff that we're doing with a website. It's like, it's all that extra added work, too, on top of it from what I'm accustomed to. Because you guys remember when this didn't have a website.
Absolutely.
This but now, was just a podcast with a Facebook page and a Twitter account, and that was it.
Now we want to be a place where people can come and get all of their hockey news in one spot.
Yep, and that's why I have a Rangers guy. It's why I have a Blues guy. It's why I have a Maple Leafs guy in Steve, who needs to get so much more credit than he thinks he deserves, because that man's a workhorse with all those graphics that he makes for us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he busts his tail, and I love him so much for it. But yeah, so this was like the first year, and also next season is our 5th anniversary season.
Hmm.
Which means we're going to have a logo made just for that, you know. We're going to be like a hockey team where you have like the 5th anniversary patch on your jersey. We're going to have that for TXHT, but on the websites and stuff like that.
And like I might add, we should definitely do something special, some live type of special deal, and we are in Ontario next year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about that later, though, because that is still a work in progress. I don't want to put out the full shebang on that yet, because, like, obviously, 2 members of TX, 3 members, including myself, of TXHT are a part of it. Steve is going to be a part of it since he lives in Toronto, because he's going to help out with a few things. Him and I have already talked about a few things that I'd like to do. Outside of going to the Hockey Hall of Fame. So yeah, like that is still a massive work in progress, but anybody who knows about a past tournament that Team TXHT won, let's just say get ready for another tournament that TXHT is going to be a part of, and it's going to be cool. But anyways, we kind of got sidetracked because we're like kind of reminiscing on stuff, but Arian, I'm going to let you take the floor a little bit because, just like Russell allowed me on Forever Blue shirts, and obviously I did on my own podcast anyways, when the Caps won the Cup, to just kind of, like, talk about it and kind of let it, like, sink in a little bit, you're going to get that same opportunity. Arian, tell us about it. Tell us about the Blues winning the Cup. Has it sunk in yet?
Well,
it took me a while. I'll admit that. It took me a while to let it sink in that it was real.
It sunk in pretty quickly, but the kind of euphoria from it took a little while to to really register. Because the problem was, as much as I tried to be negative, as much as I tried to say,
wow. You are such a negative person, by the way.
I'm not a negative person. I'm a negative person when it comes to sports and the Blues and somewhat the Cardinals, yeah. But when it comes to this, when it comes to sports, yes. And so I always try to tell myself, oh, well, you know what? Maybe they're not going to win. But once they got up 3-2 and they were going to play that game in St. Louis, in my mind, I basically said, this is done. And they're going to win on Sunday. But I also treated that like a game 7. I thought they were going to win, but I said if they lose, it's done. So I was so excited on Sunday, and I really just planned on, you know, how I was going to feel and what I was going to do, you know, when they won it and how Brett Hull was going to react and how the fans were going to react. And then they got the brakes beat off them. And I was like, oh, man, what, you know, outside of just getting otherworldly lucky in game 7, this team is done. And so I was excited about game 7, but nowhere near as excited as I was for game 6, because I just sort of felt that we had a lower than 50% chance to win. And then, but after we got that second goal in game 7, then I was kind of thinking, you know what, we probably are going to win this. I don't think we're going to let in 2 goals. And I was able to watch that game kind of knowing, you know, there was really no anticipation. So I think all of that, you know, coming together when they won, I was really, really happy. But I wasn't, like, stunned. Later, I became a little bit stunned, especially after I saw all of the fan reactions. Because that's more than just wanting to see the Blues win. You know, I still have a very deep connection and love for the city. So being able to see how much it meant to the people living there, to Blues alumni, to everybody, that's more when it really sunk in.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I'm just talking from my personal experience from last summer, which you were around me when it happened, too. But, like, yeah, it was, like, I was at the Game 5 viewing party outside Capital One Arena. And I remember just, like, when it happened, like, we're hugging, like, random people that we didn't know. And it was, like, but, like, even though we were there celebrating, I just still didn't believe it. And then I went to the parade. I was, like, all right, this is cool. Still didn't, even though I'm wearing the championship hat on my head. Yeah, I still don't believe this happened, you know? And, yeah, it was just, it took a while, but, like, the fact that, like you said, the alumni, you know, taking it in, and, like, I know the Caps alumni really took it in, just like the way the Blues alumni did. Probably not to the level of Brett Hull. I think Brett Hull and Alexander Ovechkin are on the same level right now of cup Brett celebrations.
Brett Hull is still drunk as we're recording this podcast.
Just to let you know, I think Ovi's still drunk from last summer. but no, it was like it's really cool, and but like there's one Caps alumni that I'm really particularly happy for, and that's Craig Berube, because he was part of that 98 Capitals team that went to the finals against Detroit and was unfortunately swept. Thanks, Esa-Tikkanen, for missing that empty net in game 2. But to see Berube come in and, like, take a team from last place, and I always thought Berube was a good coach. I thought he was a good coach of Philadelphia, and I think he just got the raw end of the stick because, you know, the reason that he was kind of let go was because Ron Hextall came in, and Ron Hextall obviously was trying to change things for, you know, his vision of the team. Mm-hmm. So I feel kind of bad for Berube on that because I thought Berube did a great job in Philly. But then he goes to St. Louis. He's the assistant coach to Mike Yeo, who's now ironically an assistant coach in Philadelphia. Full circle on that one. But then Berube comes as
Philadelphia was thinking hiring Mike Yeo. That's absurd.
We'll get to that point in a moment. Let me finish this point on Berube though, real quick. But Berube comes in. He takes over this team who's last place. And he wins, he guides them to the Stanley Cup. And I'm not going to lie, I bet you seeing the Capitals, a team that he played a lot of years with, really helped motivate him.
Mm-hmm.
you know, especially becoming a head coach, you know, going into, or when he became the head coach, which he did sign a 3-year deal this year, so the interim tag is officially off of him.
Yep.
Which took long enough, you know, you thought it would have been done a little bit earlier, but whatever. But,
yeah, but
and Berube deserved it. He did.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And I think that it probably took a little while just because they were figuring out exactly what to pay him, because he should get paid really whatever he, not whatever he wants to get paid, but they can't lowball him.
No, no, they can't at all. But no, but, hey, Russell, how is the Brett Hull is drunk alert right now?
Look, if I'm Brett Hull, I'm not going to be sober until probably like around training camp. But look, Brett Hull, one of my favorite moments from this whole Blue Stanley Cup run. By the way, Arjen, congratulations. Like, a cup run for the ages.
Thank you.
Amazing seeing what the Blues pulled off since January. But Brett Hull, my favorite moment was when he was at the parade on the stage. And he goes, "We don't need to go anymore. We went." And he's just ripped on stage screaming, "We went Blues" into the mic. And watching that, and even hearing the TV guys, just like they can't even control the laughter. That did it for me right there. I was like, "Wow, no one cares. Everyone is partying. The Blues are the champions." Like Brett Hull is just zooted on stage. It was awesome.
And this is a guy who won 2 cups: one with Dallas and one with Detroit.
This was my favorite part. My favorite part of all of this was hearing the alumni talk about how meaningless all of their other, like, Stanley Cups were. I mean, and I don't know. It really is a testament to how good of a hockey city, I guess, St. Louis is, and how much these people just like being there. Because for a city that has never won, I mean, they have a rich hockey tradition, but it wasn't a rich tradition of winning. I mean, it wasn't. Nobody could make that argument. But, you know, you look at the youth program that was developed there without any winning. Like, how many first-round picks have been from St. Louis the last couple of years? 5, 8, something like that? And then you look, the people still living in St. Louis, Brett Hull, Bernie Federko, Chris Pronger, Al McGinnis, Brodeur, Gretzky, they all still live there. So it was nice. It's really nice seeing how involved everyone still is, not just with the team, but, you know, making the city their home. And how much they all really cared about this. Like, I don't think Gretzky was looking at it and saying, "Oh, this is much more meaningful than my cuts with the Oilers." No, but Brett Hull, I think, you know.
I think, honestly, like, Chris Pronger, I can, like, he won his only cup with Anaheim, which was also, in a way, that was a meaningful cup win there because that was their first cup.
Mm-hmm. He was also their first cup, too.
Yeah, but, like, I can understand, like, a Pronger a little bit, simply because, you know, he has spent so many years in St. Louis before going to Edmonton and then Anaheim and then Philly. And then, of course, the becoming an Arizona Coyotes legend, I mean, never playing for them, and going in the Hall at the same time. But yeah, no, it is definitely a testament because, like, you know, especially Brett Hull. Like, he's living it up. It's so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Although, I don't, like, but here's the thing, though. Like, one minor difference, though, between Hull and Ovechkin is, like, we don't see Brett Hull at baseball games drunk on the field trying to throw pitches or partying in the bleachers with fans and teammates. And we haven't seen Brett Hull swimming in a fountain outside of the ballpark yet.
Yeah. We will get there, Mike. We'll get to that.
is that a threat, Russell?
No, that's Brett Hull is not anywhere close to being done on this bender that he's on right now.
Yeah, and he will. I mean, there's no comparison. Brett Hull is on another level than Ovechkin in terms of partying for the cup. Brett Hull is like 20 years on him, too.
Yeah. I think it's funny.
Alexander Ovechkin is an active player. He's like, he's what, like 33 right now? He's still like in the prime of his life. Brett Hull is like 50-something. St. Louis, chugging pints with no regard for human life.
I think also because Brett kind of let himself go after he retired, so he can get away with it too at the same time. So.
Yeah. You know, my mom was looking at him, like, this wasn't during the finals, but before, and she asked my dad, she's like, who is this guy? Why does he get a platform to talk? And my dad's like, the Brett Hall. And she looks, she's like, this is what Brett Hall is like.
Oh, man. So with that, actually, there's a little topic that I want to talk about, because apparently it was a topic of controversy all over social media. And as we all know, when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs, especially the finals, players play hurt.
Right.
And we know about the fractured jaw of Daniel Chara, which he suffered in, like, what was it, Game 5 he suffered that in of the finals?
Yeah.
You find out that, like, Pastrnak had a wrist injury. You found out in these last couple of days that Rob Thomas and Vladimir Tarasenko both had operations. And obviously people are like, oh, we need to end this warrior culture mentality. And I'm like, you do realize that this was like October, November that we're talking about with these injuries that these guys have. They aren't playing. But it's the Stanley Cup. Well, I see it a lot because of the people that I follow and stuff like that. And I'm not downplaying what they're saying. I mean, yeah, it's probably not the smartest thing to be playing with a fractured jaw. But at the same time, just being on the bench like he was for Game 5 after he had his jaw fractured spoke volumes to his team.
To your point, Mike, for the Bruins. This is what I would say regarding this whole thing. I mean, you never know when your next shot at a Stanley Cup is going to be. Even if your team has all the pieces to be a dynasty, even if your team has all the pieces to compete year in and year out, you never know when your shot is going to be your last shot at a cup. You just don't know what the parity in the NHL nowadays. I will say this, though. Zdeno Chara played through a broken jaw. There were guys playing through broken ribs. There are guys playing through wrist injuries, sure. But one thing that I did not like that I saw come out after was that Jake DeBrus was playing with a concussion.
Now, see, I agree with that, because here's the thing about DeBrus with the concussion thing. And my dad and I were talking about it. And here's the thing. If DeBrus lied and said that he wasn't feeling, that he lied to the medical staff about the concussion and saying that he was fine and that there was no big deal, that's on DeBrus 100%.
But
if the medical staff knew about it and they cleared him to play despite knowing the fact that he was playing with concussion-like symptoms, then that's on the medical staff. Which one is it of those two scenarios? Which one is the real one? Did DeBrus lie? Or did the medical staff just ignore it?
It's probably the medical staff. I mean, it's probably a little bit of both, but it's not, I mean, the medical staff is the one that's tasked with being a little bit more cautious than they might need to be. So, you know, you see it all the time. Hockey might be a little bit better than other sports, but come on, look at the other Boston team when they were playing in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Edelman clearly had a concussion. They sent him back on the field. It's on the medical staff to know when a potential concussion happened and kind of just use past data and say, yes, you might be telling me that you're fine. You might kind of be feeling okay, although I don't think people are always the best judge of, you know, if they have concussions or not. And it should have been on them to say, you need to sit out a little bit longer.
Yeah, and I don't think any of us are saying that that's the wrong way to go about it, because it's the right way to go about it. But also part of the problem is that, like, I don't think the spotters, the ones that are supposed to, like, that are spotting everything, are doing a good job of doing their job of spotting concussions and stuff like that. Because they're trained to tell if somebody's concussed. Mm-hmm. It also comes on the NHL. Because, and I've made it very known, I wrote it on a blog about how the gambling is horrible. And the fact that they're putting a sports book in Capital One Arena is despicable, and I hate it so much. And I hope it causes a lot of problems that they have to close it. But if people haven't figured out, I'm anti-gambling, so screw you if you are. Or if you don't agree with my opinion on the fact that gambling is wrong and you shouldn't be allowed to do it in sports. But one of the things that I was hoping that would come out of this, and then Bettman said in his like State of the Union before Game 1 of the Finals, was that teams are not going to, or still don't have to disclose what the injuries are. They can just keep it as lower body, upper body.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know with like the NFL, with because of the gambling spreads that they have, all the injuries have to be announced.
Mm-hmm.
So like you have to know, oh, so-and-so has a hand injury, so-and-so has a concussion, so-and-so has a broken leg, so-and-so has a back issue. You know, like you know what every injury every player has because of those gambling spreads. And the fact that the NHL is keeping everything as lower body, upper body, that's a big issue too. Because a team can literally just go, well, he has an upper body injury. Okay, well, what's the definition of an upper body injury? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like they need to get rid of that. If a guy has a concussion, which you can tell because the shot was to the head, I mean, we have so much video now, you can kind of, you can tell what the upper body or lower body injury is nowadays. And I still remember Mike Vogel, the Capitals, going, they're like, oh, well, if you disclose the injury, then teams will target it. We're going to target it anyways. We watch video.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's why Mike Vogel's a hack and he's not that great of a reporter, because it's like, if you really stand with that stance, you're an idiot. I can watch video and I can go out on the ice and I can target a guy just by watching the video, not because you announced what the injury was.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely. So that's a stupid stance to stand on. But like, the fact that they're able to still hide everything. You know, we ended up finding out today that the lower body injury that Brooks Orpik had last season, or this past season, was his knee. Because he met with the press today when he announced his retirement. So, like, you find out that he couldn't walk up steps, walk up and down stairs. It bothered him. He took the elevator at the arenas just to get to the locker rooms. And stuff like that. So
that type of stuff, playing through those injuries, I really don't care. Because I feel this is, there's a certain level of assumption of risk that players, all athletes, are going to take on. And I'm only going to draw the line where it's going to, again, I guess I can't really define what I mean by like truly affect your lifelong health. Because yes, if you can't walk, that's going to affect your lifelong health too. I think there are still different tiers. Like your mind is the top one. So at least I'm going to isolate, you know, if you have some type of head injury. I know a lot of these players want to play anyway, even if they have these head injuries. But that is something that, you know, the NHL rightfully has stepped in and said, it doesn't really matter. You know, you cannot. There are certain risks you are not allowed to assume.
Except the NHL doesn't care.
Yeah.
Because have you actually seen the concussion protocol?
Right.
It's a joke. NHL concussion protocol is a joke.
They'll change it.
Do what has to happen. And this is something my father has said repeatedly. This is also how he wants to see the outdoor games to get ended. You need to have a player literally get killed on the ice or have a career-ending injury on the ice. And it has to be a concussion that the spotters refuse to spot. Or in the case of the outdoor games, he just wants somebody to, like, you know, break their neck or something and be paralyzed because, you know, that's the only way you're going to get rid of the outdoor games.
So,
which is my dad's opinion, but, you know.
The only way the league will fix things is if there's a serious injury like that.
See, here's the thing. As much as you don't want a serious injury, it might have to be the only way to get it.
Yes, but at the same time, you don't want it to get to that point.
Yeah, no, I agree. You don't want it to get to that point. And quite honestly, with the all these concussion lawsuits that are going on, like against the NFL, the NHL, especially with the NHL one, because Bettman still denies that CTE and concussions have any links to each other, which is completely not true. You know, completely 100,000% not true.
Yeah, that gets to me.
That's the thing. It's like the NHL needs to lose that court case, because that's the only way they're going to have to put in a concussion protocol. And do you know who actually has one of the best concussion protocols out of all in sports and entertainment? The WWE.
Mm.
Because Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
If people don't remember what happened in 2007, Chris Benoit killed his wife and son and then committed suicide. But it was later found out that it was not because of steroids or anything like that. It was because he had CTE.
Mm-hmm.
He was not there in his head because of the CTE. They literally said when Christopher Nowinski's institute did the study on his brain, they literally said he had the brain of an 80-year-old with dementia.
Yeah.
Because of all the chair shots and stuff that he took to the head. You know, and all the blows to the head from the headbutts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, because of that and what WWE learned from that, and WWE donates money to the Nowinski Fund or Institute, you know, to further the research on it. And WWE just put up a WWE 365 documentary on the WWE Network the other day or the other night after WWE Stomping Grounds, and it was on Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss suffered, like, I think it was like 2 to 3 concussions in a year. And WWE, to protect her, essentially kept her out of the ring for the longest time. Like, even when she got cleared, they still kept her out of the ring. Because mm-hmm. they wanted to make sure that her brain was all right before they got her back in there. WWE has done that with Randy Orton. WWE has done that with several other top tier talents. I can't remember all of them off the top of my head, but like Alexa Bliss is one of the biggest ones, and so is Randy Orton, because they're two of the biggest names in professional wrestling. And the big thing with Orton was when he had that SummerSlam match with Brock Lesnar, where Brock Lesnar literally elbowed him in the head and busted him wide open and gave him a concussion. Which, Russell, you would have known that because you probably watched it along as well as I did.
Look.
But the thing is, though, is that WWE literally takes the measures, like, if you're going to miss a year because of a concussion, you're going to miss a year because of the concussion. I mean, look what they did with Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan was retired for 3 years before he was allowed to get back in the ring. And that was all concussion related. Russell?
Yeah.
You were going to say something?
I thought you were going to continue here. I didn't want to interrupt you. But, okay, here's the thing with concussions, all right? I've unfortunately had two in my life, okay?
I've had eight that I know of.
For people out there that don't know or don't fully understand what you experience when you go through one, it feels, at least to me, both times I've had one, you feel kind of off is the best way I can kind of put it. You kind of like when it originally happened to me, half of my body kind of felt fuzzy, if that makes sense to people listening. For a good few hours after the initial collisions that caused them, you feel kind of sluggish. It's something that really, really needs to be taken a lot more seriously by the NHL, and I know they're taking steps to do it, as we've seen with the spotters, but if Jake DeBrusk really did have a concussion, circling back to this, and they allowed him to play in the Stanley Cup Final, people should lose their jobs.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely, 100%. But at the same time, the spotters aren't doing that great of a job either. They really aren't. You know, the fact that, like, somebody takes a shot to the head and it's clear that the guy's concussed and he doesn't go back into the locker room to go for concussion protocol, which we have seen quite a bit throughout the regular season and playoffs, spotter ain't doing their job.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. How many times this year did David Backus take a headshot and the Bruins let him back in the game? At least twice. Yeah. Maybe it's a little bit DeBrusk's fault, and maybe it's a little bit the NHL's fault, but it's a lot the Bruins' fault. There are some players and some parts of that team I guess I have some respect for, but the way they play the game, the way they run their team, it's not great. It's not great. And if DeBrusk was playing on another team, I'm not sure he would have been allowed to play.
I bet you, here's the thing. If he was probably on another team and you're still in the Stanley Cup Finals, if he had the concussion, I think the concussion was suffered in the first round, if I remember right. Wasn't it a first round thing against Toronto when he took the hit initially that caused it?
I don't remember.
I'm not entirely sure. No.
If I remember right, that was the thing. He took a hit in the Toronto series in the first round, and that's what caused the concussion. Now we know, it's the first round. I mean, you can miss some games in the first round. Burakovsky did it last summer. You know. Where he also missed some of the second round, too, because he had wrist surgery. So it's like, it is possible to miss some games in the playoffs. I get it. And if he probably missed those few games in the first and maybe second round, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
No, you're right.
Because that's if I remember right, that's what it was. He took the hit in the first round. That's what gave him the concussion.
Yeah. And, Mike, I don't mean to cut you off, but...
I love you, too.
I would like to talk prospects before I do have to go.
No, that's fine. But real quick, you said you've had two concussions, right?
That's correct.
Arian, how many concussions have you had?
Zero.
You're the lucky one. I've had eight that I know of.
Take care of yourself, Mike.
Why do you think I haven't really played since last September? But I will say this to add on to one thing that you said real quick. I know one concussion caused me to black out because of the way I got hit. And I remember getting hit, but I don't remember really anything else after that point. Five were from hockey, two were from a medieval LARP where I took a foam padded sword to the face twice. And then once was from getting mugged. And the mugged one is the one I remember the most afterwards. Because that's when I knew I was constantly dizzy. I couldn't stand because my equilibrium was not in sync. And my, my equilibrium wasn't in sync. So I was constantly dizzy and I had nausea. I couldn't eat food. And even to the day, I mean, it's more of I still get migraines from time to time. And that's kind of like the post-concussion stuff. My last concussion was 9 years ago.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of lucky on that end, especially with all the hockey that I played in that time, that I haven't suffered another one. But, my last concussion was 2010.
Well, I hope there are no more in your future because they are not fun.
No, they're not. And it's like I'm lucky. I kind of – and Arian, you know this because you've seen me play 5,000 times. Even though I play a grinder style, I play also kind of a safe style, you know, where it's like, yeah, I go in, I do the battles, but I'm not going in trying to get hit or, you know, throw a hit either at the same time. So I play safe. So with that, now we get to move over to prospects. Russell's over here celebrating. He's blowing his saxophone in celebration. Because the New Jersey Devils made the mistake of taking Jack Hughes number one overall. I'm sorry, but Capu should have gone number one overall.
I told you from the beginning that this is how this was going to play out.
I mean, you and I, obviously I was doing a little trolling for fun because that's just what we do. But in all seriousness, though, I think Capu is going to be the better player of the two. I think hands down he will.
I do not.
Now, I'll say this. Capo Caco is crazy to say, but he is the best prospect the New York Rangers have ever drafted. The last time the Rangers drafted this high was when Brad Park was on Broadway in the 1960s. Okay, just to give people some perspective. This is our franchise player moment, which we're very thrilled about since we've been going through this rebuild and trying to get the team back to being respectable and back to cup contention again. Now, to Mike's point, you think Capo Caco will be the better player than Jack Hughes. Yes. And to Arian's point, Arian thinks Jack Hughes will be the better player than Capo Caco. Now, my personal opinion, and it pains me to say this too, by the way, since it's in the New Jersey Devils, but I do think 5, 6, 7 years from now, while Capo Caco is going to be possibly an 80-point player, maybe 85, 90 if we're lucky one day, to the tune of maybe a 35, 55 season on the norm, I think Jack Hughes is going to be the guy who's going to be hitting the 90, 100, 110-point season down the line for the Devils, and it might take him a little longer to develop, but at the same time, you don't go to the NHL draft and draft for next season. You go to the NHL draft and you draft for 5 years down the line.
Yeah, but do you see Jack Hughes surviving? Because as Ben McKenzie put him, he's the poor man's Connor McDavid.
Yeah, but
he's also he's been injury prone. He's been knocked out of the World Juniors due to injuries. He was healthy scratched in the most recent Worlds, where Capu played the entire thing and won. But the only reason Hughes got put into the lineup was because of injuries to other guys on Team USA.
Well, you also have to look at the depth that the Americans had at the World Championships, and you have to look at the depth that Team Finland had at the World Championships. Now, look, I love Capo Caco. I think he's going to be an amazing player. I think he's going to be a cornerstone winger for the New York Rangers as they go along in this rebuild. But you have to remember, in total, I think the Finnish national team had about 18 games of NHL experience. Meanwhile, on the Team USA side, you have guys like Patrick Kane, James Van Riemsdyk, players that have played and had long careers in national hockey. And Jack had to kind of break into that lineup when he could.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that if you're going to be the number one pick overall, which he did become, you want to be in that lineup every night, not being healthy scratched. And the fact that the only reason he got into the lineup was because of injuries to other guys tells me that he didn't fight hard enough to get into the lineup.
I don't know if that's true. I think it was Jack's choice. He would have been in every night, but the coach had some decisions he had to make.
So, we'll see. I mean, one way or the other, you have, like, your new rivalry, which is going to be Hughes versus Capu.
And also, let's not forget, the New York Rangers traded for Jacob Trouba about a week ago now. Roughly about a week ago now. The New Jersey Devils send Jeremy Davies, Steven Santini in 2 seconds to the Nashville Predators and get P.K. Subban the week after.
Yep. And then but on top of that, the Flyers picked up Matt Niskanen and signed Kevin Hayes after trading a fifth-round pick for him.
Absolutely.
The Capitals got Radko Gudas, which I actually really liked that trade for the Capitals because it did cap relief. And then with Brooks Orpik retiring, which I said was going to happen, Radko Gudas replaces Brooks Orpik. And Radko Gudas can easily slot into the spot of Orpik on your third pairing. Actually, he can even play top four pairing minutes like he did in Philadelphia because he was hands down the best defenseman on Philadelphia last season. And he can play on the penalty kill. You know? So
it's going to be...
So, like, four teams in our division made moves.
Absolutely. With more to come if you believe reports that the Rangers really do want Artemi Panarin on their team.
Oh, no. The last tweet I saw before this is that Panarin's going to meet, but all signs point to him and Bobrovsky going to Florida.
Which I ultimately do think is going to happen, but point being, if Panarin is another potential piece that could be injected into this Metropolitan Division, although he was already in it with the Jackets, but shifting to New York would be...
I'll tell you this. Do you know why he's going to go to Florida? Two reasons. I mean, while the Rangers have John Davidson back, which is great for the Rangers, and I'm glad that Davidson's back with the Rangers, there's two reasons why Panarin's going to go to Chicago, or not Chicago, Florida. Okay. Number one, Joel Quenneville. That's number one. Actually, technically, you could say Joel Quenneville and Dave Talon, because Talon was the one who drafted Panarin in the first place, if I remember right.
That was the case, right? He wasn't drafted, was he?
Well, he was undrafted.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was undrafted. I guess Talon just brought him in or signed him as an undrafted free agent or something. But anyways, but you got Joel Quenneville there. That's, like, number one. Number two, he's going to get 7 years, and he's going to be in Florida, which is where, you know, his fiance, wife, whatever she is now, is really going to want to be, because Miami is the place you want to be for modeling, for the type of stuff that, from what I understand, she wants to be a model. So she either wants to be in New York, Florida, or L.A., and apparently it sounds like Florida is also the top destination of where she wants to be out of all the other places.
Counterpoint there is then he has to live in Florida.
Yeah, I know. That's the other downside of it, too. But don't forget, the Panthers are a prime candidate to get moved to Quebec. So there's also that. Because what everyone also doesn't know is that I love how everyone's going on about Arizona, because they have the new ownership now. And they're all talking about, like, oh, Arizona, they're gonna move to Quebec. The guy who bought them has ties to Houston, Texas, which also, by the way, if people weren't paying attention and really paying attention to the little signage that the NHL was putting out there, what was the one thing that happened when the NHL announced Seattle?
I don't know. What?
Arizona is going to move to the Central Division.
Oh, right. Yes, yes. Well, and they still won't make the playoffs more now.
But the thing is, though, is that who has the fourth biggest market in media?
Isn't it Houston, right? Houston?
Yeah, and where's Houston?
Central.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the Arizona Coyotes are probably going to be moving to Houston, Texas in the next couple years.
Wouldn't shock me.
And then Florida is like the prime candidate now to move up to Quebec, which honestly should happen because they can't draw people to save their life.
I believe it's the Metro something center in Quebec. I forget exactly what it's called. But
yeah, like they have that really nice.
It's built. Yeah,
like,
it's built.
It's like a brand. It opened like, what, 3 years ago?
Yeah, it's new. It's ready. So we'll see.
And they've been doing exhibition games there too.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a nice arena. It's like they have an NHL arena. They're ready to rock and roll. Quebeccourt is what owns the arena. And I think it's called Quebeccourt Center or something like that.
No, the Somethingtron Center, I want to say.
Oh, yeah. It's Somethingtron Center. But
also, Mike, thank you for having me on.
You're not ending it. I decide when this gets ended. This is my podcast. This is part one of three, good sir.
I apologize, good sir. I can try to come back on, though, at another time, but I need to...
But all right, but actually, this is a good time to do the wrap-up anyways, to then move on to part two, which will be with our good friend Steve Gardner. And a little later on in part three, we'll have Nathaniel Oliver doing all the women's hockey talk, because, oh my God, we have so much to talk about in regards to that. Russell, where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can find me on Twitter at RussellHartman1. You can also follow Forever Blue Shirts at #4, Ever Blue Shirts, and follow the podcast at 4B_radio.
Arian, where can the people find you on the social medias?
That's actually a good question. I believe my Twitter handle is AWEISEN123.
All right, and that's it for you. Okay.
Yeah, I don't have any other social media.
All right, sounds good, man. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, Russell and Arian, obviously you and I will talk a lot more in the upcoming days, weeks, months leading up to next season. But next time you guys will be on TXHT will be in September when we do our 2019-20 preview. So with that, gentlemen, thank you for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of part one. We'll be back for part number two. Which is, if okay, it's on the website, so you just go down in the same blog to the next sentence, and then there's part two with Steve, okay? So just go down one sentence, click the play button. It's right there in front of you. You can do the thing. The tiny potato believes in you. Gentlemen, thank you so much. And until you listen to part two, we'll see you on the ice.
Thank you.